Virtual reality, it's everywhere. Or to be more precise, everywhere is in virtual reality.
Welcome to Bora Bora. If you look to the left, you'll see one of our most beautiful beaches.
Just strap on a headset and you're riding a roller coaster. Or whitewater rafting down a rushing river. Or immersed in a fantastic world with dragons and swords and fire. But we were wondering, is anyone using virtual reality for good? Anyone figuring out a way to use it to make people's lives better? To alleviate human suffering? To deal with real people and real problems? Anyone using this technology for the sake of humanity? So we went hunting for just such a story. And guess what? We found them everywhere. Later in this podcast, we're going to tell you some amazing stories of people who have done truly remarkable things with VR. But I want to focus on one person. Not because the technology she is using is so incredible, but in a way, because it's not. What's so incredible and important is how this story came to be. Our hope is, and has always been, that in listening to these stories of impossibilities made possible, maybe someone, somewhere, maybe it's you, would say, wait a second, I can do this. I don't need to wait for permission or for some institution or establishment to give me permission. I'm just going to go do this myself. I'm going to try to change someone's life. And because this is our 4th of July episode, we were hoping to find someone who decided to do that for our veterans, because they have given so much for our country, and more it seems like we need to find ways to give back to them. So we went hunting for just such a person, and we found her. In, of all places, a local TV station in Columbia, Missouri. I'm Mick Ebling, and this is Not Impossible. This podcast is brought to you by Avnet, a company dedicated to helping creators of all types find whatever they need to get from idea to product and then get their product to market anywhere in the world. Today, we're going to hear about how a regular person, someone just like you and me, decided to delve into the world of technology, but technology for the sake of humanity, and how she's not only helping so many others, she's also saved herself. People might think the life of a TV news reporter is glamorous, but Sarah Hill, a reporter from Columbia, Missouri, found out that covering the news, sometimes you're just dealing with some really tough stuff.
Hey gang, here's what's ahead in 30 minutes on U News. A Camden County mother is charged with slitting the throat of her 9-year-old baby. We'll have new details on that coming up at 11 a.m.
And if you think that is hard to listen to, imagine covering stories like that every day, day in and day out. Sarah was a news reporter for roughly 20 years, and a really good one. But when I talked to her, she told me that over time, the news just became too much.
I am a recovering journalist.
What does that mean?
For the last 25 years, we covered a lot of bad stuff. And as a journalist, you have to absorb sometimes the world's negativity. You have to step inside the souls of some of these individuals who've lost children, who've, experienced trauma in their life.
I think that after a while, that on a person, if they really internalize that, that would just weigh so heavily on someone's soul.
You know, that's the reason why sometimes journalists self-medicate, and there are ways that they, you know, learn to cope.
So you got, what was the breaking point for you? What was the point where you said, I got to go do something different now?
I had a panic attack. I had several of them, you know, back to back, and stuttering and just, you know, feeling of dread that you're going to die, sweating, your heart's racing.
During a hospital stay, she was put through a battery of tests. They put her on medications and tried other treatments as well.
You know, none of it really helped, but what did help was technology.
What do you mean?
I didn't want to take medication. I had tried that, and medication to help you sleep, particularly, was not something that I handled very well. So a friend of mine, who is actually a coworker, worked with my husband, Dr. Jeff Tarrant, wrote me a laptop prescription about 20 years ago to help me sleep.
Okay, I bet you that's the first time you've heard that. A laptop prescription? But that's really what it was. He prescribed a program with a little airplane in it that responded not to controls on the keyboard, but to controls in Sarah's mind and to her emotions.
I put an electrode on my forehead, and my goal was to quiet my brain. And when those brain waves quieted, the airplane on the laptop would go below a red bar, and it worked. After about a week, I had a great night's sleep.
So that's step one in Sarah's journey. Now put that aside for a second, because while Sarah was dealing with this anxiety, she was also starting to shift careers, although she might not have recognized it at the time.
Calvin Filbert was on a waiting list for 2 years for a chance to see the Vietnam Veterans Memorial.
I know he drove a truck. He was in the military 18 years. He wanted to go so bad.
She was reporting on something called Honor Flights. It's a national movement to get veterans to their war memorials in Washington, D.C.
So as a journalist, I covered one in another city. Mm-hmm. We aired those stories, and then we started getting phone call after phone call from veterans in our community saying, we want an honor flight hub. You know, where do we call to get one?
So they went on air and asked if folks were interested in starting a local chapter right there in Columbia, Missouri.
Make a long story short, we had a meeting in the TV station boardroom, and we formed a charity, an Honor Flight charity, a hub of Honor Flight.
As the flights would go out, Sarah would report on them. She'd tell the stories of the men and the women, how excited they were to go to their memorial, and how meaningful it was.
A lot of these men and women, specifically World War II veterans, they came home from the war. There wasn't a ticker tape parade. They just went to work.
But it wasn't easy getting these veterans to the memorials, especially World War II veterans. Because some of these men and women were in their 80s, 90s, even 100 years old. A lot of them, because of their health concerns, were advised not to go.
So I would get voicemails from some of them on my phone, because at the time I was one of the people that they called to say that they weren't able to go because they don't have the strength sometimes to be on these flights, or they're on too much heart medication that their doctor says they might not survive the trip if they go.
And the voicemails just kept coming. Veterans, all very emotional, saying they just couldn't go. It was a lot for Sarah. It was also very personal, because as she was working with these veterans, her thoughts would drift back again and again to her own grandfather.
My grandpa was a World War II veteran. Actually, he was an Army Air Corps. That was what they called it back then during World War II. But yeah, but he passed away before he had the opportunity to see the memorial. And, you know, he would have loved, I mean, he just thoroughly enjoyed, you know, getting to see it with all of his other fellow soldiers, sailors, Marines, all at the same time.
And I get it. My grandfather was in the Army Air Corps. My father was in the Air Force. I was at the Air Force Academy myself for a while. I believe in the military. I understand what Sarah was thinking. She was thinking about her grandfather, but also she couldn't stop thinking about all of the other vets, the ones who were still alive, but they couldn't make the trip because of their physical limitations. She started to think that there had to be a way to get these vets to their memorials, to pay their respects, even if it wasn't on an airplane.
Someone said, well, did you know that you could actually capture them in VR and you wouldn't have to physically go to DC? You wouldn't have to worry about the bandwidth, the technology, all the volunteers. And I said, really? That's great.
Sounded pretty simple. Turned out not so simple.
So I got a bid on what it would cost to create a VR film. It was $500,000.
No!
That was the company that, yeah. I mean, granted, this was, you know, in 2013, probably 2013 or 2014. I thought, you know, we're media people. We know how to capture video. You know, we can do it with one camera. You know, surely we should be able to do it with 16 to 24 cameras, right?
So she taught herself. She got equipment on loan, and she called her company Story Up.
And by golly, we created one piece and then another and then another and another. So we have about four experiences on the one of the apps now where they can see the World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Women's Memorial, and then most recently the USS Nimitz.
Amazing. Since then, thousands of veterans, thousands, have used the StoryUp VR experience to get to their memorials. And I know that might not seem like such a big deal to a lot of people, but for these veterans, it's a huge deal. When you listen to them tell their stories, you realize this is one of the most important and meaningful moments they could hope for. One they never thought that they could experience, but now they can.
Okay, I'm Rick King. I live in central Illinois, a little town called Moroa. I'm 69 years old. I do have terminal cancer. I'm fighting it real hard and doing a real good job. And that's the reason I did not go on the honor flight.
Rick is an Army vet, and he desperately wanted to get to the Vietnam Memorial. It meant a lot to him. And when the doctors told him he was too sick to travel, he was devastated.
When they told us, no, I could not go, yeah, it's gut-wrenching. Because a friend of mine, he was going on the same very flight. We were going to sit together and shoot the bull and have a good time. And then that was taken away from me. And then all of a sudden they come up with this virtual reality, and it was a spur of the moment.
All of a sudden, Rick, who spends a lot of time on a hospital bed in his home, is now transported to Washington, D.C.
Because it was kind of gloomy and overcast here that day, and it was so sunny and bright in Washington. Oh, that made me feel really good. Cheers you up.
And seeing the memorial made him feel, it gave him closure in a way he had never expected. In his heart, he felt like his Army buddies were there at that memorial with him. And this was his way of saying goodbye.
Sure, I got very emotional. I teared up and thinking that there's, oh, my buddy there, that's unbelievable. I remember when him and I used to sneak out and drink beer, and now he doesn't even know where he's at. But he's there at the Vietnam Memorial.
And let's be clear, Sarah and her team are doing all of this for free, just as a way to give back to our veterans. And they can barely keep up with the demand.
Right now, we have a large waiting list of more than 100 people. These are terminally ill and aging 80 and 90-year-old veterans. We have 6 headsets that we're shipping, you know, around the nation to try to reach them in time. And every other week we get an email from a family member, a son or a daughter who says their veterans passed away because we haven't had the ability to get them a headset in time.
But as emotionally powerful as these virtual visits to the memorials were, Sarah started noticing that the effects went beyond that. They were affecting the veterans in ways that no one could have ever dreamed of.
What really struck us is one of the first times we were giving a veteran a tour, and we went in and his caretaker told us, just so you know, he's not able to lift his arms above his head. He's doesn't have that much strength, so you'll have to put the headset on him because he can't lift his arms. Well, we put the headset on them, and halfway through the piece, there's this touching moment where they're on an honor flight and they are coming out of the airport, and the crowd is up on their feet and applauding just for them as they come out. And during that moment in the film, this veteran, whose caretaker told me he wasn't able to lift his hands above his head, had his arms straight out, trying to touch the other veterans that were going by him.
I love it.
And it was at that moment that, we thought, this is affecting them. It's affecting their physiology.
Affecting them? Hang on a second. Think about that. This guy was incapable of lifting his arms, yet thanks to this virtual experience, he was now lifting his arms for the first time in who knows how long. And that's when Sarah put two and two together. She suddenly made the connection with what she had experienced. Remember the laptop prescription, the airplane game that helped her cope with her own anxiety? Well, she thought, maybe there was more to this technology than meets the eye. We'll tell you where that leads after the break. This is a podcast dedicated to technology for the sake of humanity. But it's also about the people behind that technology. If that's you, Avnet can help, no matter what you build. Why? Because they are the first company ever to offer true end-to-end solutions for product development in-house. That way, creators in any corner of the world can take an idea from prototype all the way through mass production. Are you a startup, an established OEM? Do you need help designing your product or organizing your workflow or getting stuff to market? Avnet's got your back. Your world is one that's always changing, and that's why Avnet is here to help you reach further. And we want to give a special shout out to Avnet's engineering communities, Hackster and Element 14, who help creators vet and invent the technology of tomorrow. Want to do more than just listen to this podcast? Maybe something like taking on the next Not Impossible challenge? Go to podcastnotimpossible.com to find info for you and for anyone who wants to take their project one step further. So Sarah Hill, this recovering journalist, turned her talents towards helping veterans visit their war memorials, using virtual reality to get them there. But then she started seeing something really, really interesting that was happening to some of them. The experience was affecting them in ways that reminded her of her own experience. When she was suffering anxiety attacks, and that doctor prescribed her the virtual airplane game that helped calm her mind. So Sarah went back to that doctor to see if he could help her figure out what was going on with these veterans.
You know, they would cry, they would smile, they would laugh. And so it was very clear something was happening. And so that really is what started kind of the idea of like, we should measure this. We should see what's actually going on when people are in these experiences.
This is that doctor, Dr. Jeff Tarrant. He's a psychologist who works with what's called biofeedback.
So biofeedback is really any kind of a system where you are measuring some aspect of your physiology. So it could be skin temperature. It could be sweat gland activity in your fingertips. It could be your breathing.
Or your brainwaves. He thought, why not see what these experiences are doing to the brain?
Because it's immersive and because it looks and feels real, we wanted to see, well, what is actually happening? And so brainwaves seem like an obvious way to do that.
So he and Sarah teamed up and started doing research. They created meditative VR experiences, like gliding up a waterfall filmed in the lush green forest of Oregon. Now, I know what you're thinking. Meditations, biofeedback, this isn't so new, right? Believe it or not, few people have really studied this to find out if and how it really works.
There's very little research on any of this. The research is all really brand new. And so we started with just a few case studies of hooking people up, measuring their brainwave activity, and seeing what happened when they were in one of these 4 or 5 minute experiences. And very quickly, what we saw was stress regions of the brain quieted down, and they quieted down very quickly.
This is how it works. Before you put on the VR headset, you put on an EEG headband. It goes across your forehead and has electrodes on it.
And by active electrodes, we're not zapping anybody. You're just measuring what's happening in the front of the brain. And that activity is what's controlling the virtual reality experience.
So this headband is sending data to the VR headset and to the experience, and it measures which side of the brain is showing more activity. And that turns out to be very important.
The reason that we're measuring that is because we know from lots and lots of previous research that when the brain is more active, in this case gamma, on the left side, people tend to feel more positive, more optimistic, happier. They tend to be more approach-oriented, so they move toward things. Whereas if the activation is leaning over toward the right side, people tend to be more negative, more pessimistic.
As you relax, your internal feelings become manifested or actualized within the virtual reality. So for example, if you're in that waterfall, the more you relax, the more you go up the waterfall. But if you get anxious, you start to dip and the screen goes red and a voice comes on to re-engage you or to calm you. So this whole business of controlling VR with your mind and not by moving your arms and legs, that's actually pretty new. But it's something we're going to see more of in the future when it comes to using VR for our physical health and our mental health. And again, this is not some loosey-goosey intuitive idea. This is backed by hard science. They have two papers under peer review right now to make sure they've got their feet firmly planted on the ground while they reach for a goal that's pretty lofty.
We saw that we could make an impact, that we could make an emotional impact, you know, with these experiences. The whole purpose behind StoryUp is wanting to have a positive impact on people. You know, how can we use technology for good? How can we use virtual reality to help people?
And that's when they had their aha moment. Sarah started out trying to help veterans, but then she and Jeff wondered, could this help other people? People in the most stressful jobs dealing with trauma every day.
My name is Danny Spry Jr. I'm a Columbia firefighter, a member of the Columbia Professional Firefighters International Association of Firefighters Local 1055.
They decided to give it a shot with some folks who were not only in stressful jobs, but were also having trouble dealing with all that stress. Danny told us he suffers from PTSD. He gets anxious, and it's all related to the rigors and trauma of being a firefighter.
So I've seen a lot of things from 1995 to current day, and I always learned to suppress them. You know, there's things that bother you. There's things that bother the men and women that go on these calls daily, but we don't talk about.
Danny said it was hard to recognize at first.
I've lived through reckless behavior. I've lived through my family and what I've put them through. You know, my kids seeing me intoxicated, my kids seeing me angry, my wife dealing with everything that was bottled up inside of me. And there were signs, you know, with my drinking, my aggressive behavior, you know, always cranky, always edgy.
Danny, who now tries to help other folks dealing with PTSD, was curious if Sarah's technology could help. He didn't know what he was getting into at first.
I sat down in this chair and they put the virtual reality goggles on me. And it was kind of weird to adjust to at first. You're like, you know, I've got something over my face. You know, I didn't know what to expect from it. But once I did it, it was very relaxing and, you know, it was soothing.
Sarah had him do a guided meditation set in Mexico's Riviera Maya. There's white sand all around him, bright blue water. He could practically feel the heat of the sun at his back.
I've maybe been to the ocean once in my life, and it's almost like you're there. And you hear the waves, and you hear the seagulls and the people around, and it's just, it was very relaxing for me. You know, I could sit there in the chair, and but the same thing, there was a voice, you know, look for the sun, you know, what are you feeling? Do you remember your greatest memory? You know, it's just a step at a time towards relaxing you.
So the more Danny talked to us about the potential that this had to change his life, the more curious I got. So I decided I need to take this for a spin myself and see what this is all about.
Imagine breathing in joy, love,
and adjust them so they're in focus.
Or gratitude.
So I'm in the headset, and this is the voice that's talking to me, telling me to be grateful, calm, and happy. And to remember positive memories.
Your brain waves will propel you to the top of the waterfall.
What do you see?
Take a moment to
recall the waterfall and a person at the base of the waterfall.
A time when you were filled with joy, love, or appreciation.
See those blue wavy lines?
Uh-huh.
Those are your brain waves. That's your gamma asymmetry. You're feeling some positivity.
Gotcha.
And I'm floating up this waterfall. And water is cascading down in front of me. It's super green, there's trees and moss. And superimposed onto it are my own brain waves. It's this blue squiggly line going up and down. And if I keep those blue lines above the red line, I start moving up.
Are you floating?
Oh yeah.
You're powering that with your brain.
So I'm floating up the side of the waterfall. And I'm watching this blue line above a red line that's measuring how positive I am. And the more I talk to you, the more it kind of wavers, but the more I focus on something positive, I'm actually positive on the, I dip down.
So laugh, like a big, like a real, no, no, a real guffaw.
I'm actually visualizing my first wave I ever caught. And every time I do that, it goes screaming up.
The sun's behind you. You can turn around And your goal is to make it to the top of the waterfall. Are you close?
Mm-hmm. Very close.
And folks, I'm not moving my body, except for looking around a bit. I'm controlling everything with my thoughts, with my brain.
After you go up the waterfall, you'll eventually go down.
Okay.
And then the experience stops. So I'll take it off of your face.
Very cool.
They call the product helium. Heal, like you're healing someone. And they think these types of meditative experiences could train people to shift their brain states. And I gotta say, I know for some people, this sounds like all sit in a circle and sing kumbaya kind of thing. But you know what? The science seems to be saying that it works. And what's more important, it could work for the people who need it most. I say let's see how far this can go. And Sarah and Jeff think that this could go pretty far.
In the future, we see helium being handed out at a natural disaster, much like bottled water. There's no reason why people can't have some virtual peace after a tornado, after a tsunami, you know, after a crisis situation, that they can just downshift their brain.
So that's the story of Story Up. But as I said at the beginning of the show, this is just one use of VR technology for the sake of humanity. The more we looked around, the more we found people using VR for the most amazing things. One of them won a non-impossible award last year. It's called Project Delta. The sad reality is that this country is suffering through one of the worst drug epidemics we've ever seen. And the sadder reality is that even when you can get an addict into treatment, more than 8 out of 10 will relapse in the first year. Well, what if you could use VR in therapy to put them in virtual situations that trigger those relapses and then help them in that moment to learn to cope with those triggers in the real world?
It's pretty absurd that someone that's addicted to a substance can't afford treatment. That doesn't sit well with me.
This is Patrick Bordnick, the doctor behind Project Delta.
So Project Delta is basically clicking a couple buttons on a smartphone and you now have a virtual bar, a virtual heroin shooting gallery, maybe a nightclub that you can now put people into those settings where they would relapse and teach them skills. It's not a cure for addiction, but I believe it's going to be an effective tool to help us design therapies that are more effective for long-term change.
And that's just one example. We found so many more. There's startups like a company called Florio using VR for therapy with kids with autism, or Karuna Labs, which is using VR to help rehabilitate people with chronic pain. And researchers in Tel Aviv have found ways to use it in rehab and physical therapy for people with Parkinson's disease. So I think the lesson is that we're only beginning to learn the possibilities of using VR technology for the sake of humanity. But I want to say one more thing about Sarah Hill and StoryUp. Because there's one more reason that I wanted to focus on her use of this technology. You see, the reason that I was so touched by Sarah's story is that she's like me. I was just a producer too. Not a TV producer, but a film and animation producer. And I could have kept just going at that. But somewhere along the way, I was given a chance to help someone, to help create technology for the sake of humanity. And of course I had my doubts. Of course I thought, who the heck am I to try and pull this off? And that's just the point. You don't have to be a master scientist or have special degrees or have an expertise in chronic pain or Parkinson's or autism. You, listening to this podcast right now, you have all the credentials you need. You have the power to change the world. You just have to look around. Who is that one person in your life, in your community? Who's that person that you might walk by or drive by on your way to work every day? Maybe they're struggling. Maybe they're down on their luck. Maybe you know them personally. Maybe you just see them from afar. What if you were the next Sarah Hill? What if you were the person that decided, I'm just going to try to help that person? And that's the reality that I can picture. And I don't need a headset to do that. So thanks for listening to Not Impossible. Thanks again to our sponsor, Avnet, a company that provides true end-to-end technology solutions to help people who make anything, anywhere in the world, reach further. And on this special 4th of July episode, we want to salute Avnet, with more than 240 employees who are veterans of the United States Armed Services. Avnet is a proud supporter of veteran outreach and recruitment. I want to invite you to go check out Avnet's communities. Hackster, the world's fastest growing developer community for learning, programming, and building hardware. And Element 14, the biggest designer engineer community on the planet. You can find links to their websites on ours, podcastnotimpossible.com. And if you want to see a 2D version of what I was looking at in the VR headset, that's up on our website too. Joanna Clay produced this episode. Our associate producer was Vicky Shirer. Our development director, Aaron Sullivan, director of partnerships, Joe Babarski, and our executive producers are Phil Lerman and me. I'm Mick Ebling. Until next time, remember, commit first and then figure it out. I know that sounds crazy, but it's not impossible.